There's no denying that L.A. is a showbiz town. Movie and TV studios abound, and even live theaters draw big-name plays and musicals. But for smaller, independent performances, the struggle is real, and the pandemic left a lingering scar. Just recently, theatergoers let out a collective gasp when it was announced that the Mark Taper Forum would go dark for the remainder of the season.
So let them label us
deviants, because we deviate from the suffocating options that this world creates.
That iconic theater has been around since 1967, and the unexpected closure has raised fears that theater in L.A. might be dying. But iconoclasts like the Hollywood Fringe Fest beg to differ. They are bringing new, innovative, and fresh voices to public view and making those performances affordable to pretty much anybody. And art house films are struggling as well post-pandemic, but thanks to the Lemley family, whose name is practically synonymous with the art house scene, those independent films still have a home in L.A. We talk about what's going on with theater and film in Los Angeles. Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and this is Fox 11 News In Depth. Center Theater Group is a nonprofit arts organization and one of the largest theater companies in the nation. The group includes the Amundsen Theater, the Mark Taper Forum in downtown Los Angeles, and the Kirk Douglas Theater in Culver City. Just recently, the Center Theater Group announced that the Taper would go dark for the rest of the season. That caused a lot of shock and heartache among theater fans, as one can possibly imagine. Megan Pressman is the managing director and the CEO of the Center Theater Group. Megan, good to see you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you.
It's got to be kind of a tough place to be when you got an announcement like that and ticket holders that may not be very happy with that announcement. What kind of things are you hearing and what are you telling your subscribers?
First and foremost, we're telling people we have every intention of coming back, and we're trying to communicate why this had to happen right now. We're getting a real outpouring of support. Certainly, there's grief and dismay, but it's coming because people care so deeply about the Mark Taper Forum and the work that we've done here over 55 plus years.
Yeah, and as one who's been there before, I think it's remarkable some of the things you've done at that theater. But why did you have to do this? Why did you have to go dark for the rest of the season?
You know, we're still struggling to recover from COVID shutdowns. The costs of production are honestly at an all-time high. Ticket revenue is still down anywhere from 25 to 40%, depending on the show. And with ticket revenue being down, donations are also down. We just don't have as many people coming to the theater, and that's our largest form of folks who end up supporting us as a not-for-profit.
COVID was like a 1-2 punch. You had to shut down, and then all of a sudden now people are they edgy? They're concerned maybe we could end up in another COVID situation? Or are they just tightening their belts?
We believe it's a little bit of all of that, but mostly it feels that habits have changed. You know, in the 2+ years without live theater, people filled their time in other ways, and they're not subscribing at the same rates, so they're coming back on a piece-by-piece basis. They're not going to the movies as well, as you know. So people are just not filling their weeks with live entertainment at the same rates that they did before COVID.
It's not just subscriptions, is it? It's donations, it's fundraising. A lot of things go into the economics of theater.
They do, especially at not-for-profit. So it's a careful balance. And for us, we have the Amundsen Theater, and that is a lot of pre-Broadway and post-Broadway tours and shows that we put together that head to Broadway. And with those audiences being down, revenue is down there. And that's part of how we subsidize the Taper. It costs us the most to produce at the Taper because it is the kind of the bigger shows at a smaller house that really relies on donations and audience support and that other subsidy. So when everything is out of balance, the Taper is the piece that we felt was the least sustainable in the short term.
You ended the theater season after Transparent. Was that successful?
You know, it was a mixed success. I would say audiences really loved it. Critically, it depended on who you talked to. Some reviews were not a fan of the show. Other folks really loved it. It's a show that hopes to have a long future life. I could absolutely see this going to Broadway at some point in the not too far future. This is the first outing of a musicals are really hard. They're a big, complex piece to put together. So this was a premiere. The team knows they have some work to do. A lot of putting it on stage is figuring out what's fitting with the audience and what needs some revision. So it's got a big future life ahead of it that we're so excited about. And audiences loved it. You know, the LGBT community, it took place in a JCC. A lot of folks from the LA Jewish community came out and just general theater goers. But it definitely fell short of our expectations and hopes.
Yeah, there's a play that got canceled called Fake It Until You Make It, which had members of the Native American population upset. What was that kerfuffle and sort of how did that get resolved?
Sure. So that's just show that we're actually rescheduling. We're planning. It's just postponed, not canceled. That was one. We're moving the dates to a future season. We have a new artistic leader coming in, and we're going to put that in his first season. Snehal Desai is starting this summer as our third artistic director in the history of Center Theater Group. And this is a play by Larissa Fasthorse. It's a world premiere. It would be the first Native artist on the Taper stage. So it really is a big deal. And we want to make sure it has a really strong launch as part of his first season. Right now, we were in such a financial position that we wouldn't be able to responsibly produce it without really cutting corners. The audience isn't there that we need to have there. So we're putting it at a future date. We already are in conversations with the writer and director about a workshop this summer to keep the piece moving forward. But it is really felt by the audience. People are really disappointed to not have that coming this fall.
So it was mostly economic.
Predominantly economic, yes. All based on audience, getting our business model back in balance.
Well, what can people do to help? I mean, your nonprofit status. What do you want to say to folks out there?
The number one thing, and we've been saying this since we reopened, is to come back to theater. Subscribe if you did before. If you haven't subscribed before, give it a shot. It's a way to see some of the less box office name works that we have. If you subscribe, you get a wider variety of shows in front of you. Make a donation if you have that ability, but we really believe that donations come from people seeing the shows and understanding that the work that we do and help subsidize other people coming to the theater. We have a ton of education programs that people help fund that are still alive and well, and still we're not cutting back on those. But the number one thing we're hoping people do is hear the message of, if you don't come back to the theater, theater might not be there for you when you're ready to come back.
And let's talk about that. Right? Is the theater Taper just going to sit dark? Is it going to be closed? Are you going to use it for some kind of functions?
We're absolutely going to use it. What we've paused is our full production season programming. So we're not going to see four or five full productions in a subscription series next year. But we'll have special events. We'll have some community events with partners. We're going to do some talks, one-off, like the 2 or 3 week special performance engagements. But because our artistic leader hasn't started full time yet, we need a little bit more time before we can roll out that plan later this summer.
All right, Megan.
We also still have a lineup of shows at the Amundsen, so that will be announced in a few weeks.
All right, I hate to cut you off. We're kind of running out of time here, but all the best. I hope things completely come back together again for you. And thanks for joining us, Megan.
Thank you. Take care.
Coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, have you been to the Hollywood Fringe Festival? Have you even heard of it? The Edgy Theater Fest has been around since 2010, but a lot of people still don't know what to make of it. We'll check it out right after this break. Don't go away. It's unpredictable, unexpected, refreshing, and shocking. The Hollywood Fringe Fest continues to break new ground in live entertainment. The fest has been wrapping up this year, but it'll be back with more groundbreaking work soon and some repeat performances. Right now, joining us are Lois Neville and Ellen Boudreau-Denherter. I got it, didn't I?
It's
you
perfect.
Were worried about that, weren't you? And welcome to both of you. And you're co-executive directors, is that what it is?
We are. It's a big festival, so it's a team effort all the way.
So I guess the first question is, what is Fringe Fest?
It's a great question. It's an annual performing arts festival, actually the largest uncurated theater arts festival in the country. But it's really just a platform for independent artists to work at independent venues, bringing their work to life without gatekeepers. They bring their own work and they produce it themselves.
So they produce, and who produces with them? So you work with them. they bring their production and they bring their cast along with that production?
Pretty much. It depends on the show. So we have hundreds of different productions that have different ideas that they come up with on how they're going to run it. So basically, to participate in Fringe, all you need to do is pay your registration fee, which includes our ticketing platform and then all the festival, the marketing that comes with it. Book a venue, which operates, we have our venues that operate at lower costs because they're able to stack 10 shows in a night instead of one. And then you also have like found spaces. So some people will do shows in their apartments or they'll do shows on the street. And as long as they have insurance and follow all legal rules, anything goes.
So Fringe, as defined by Webster or whatever, it is Fringe.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very edge of your seat, very cutting edge.
Yeah, we have anything from like Brendan Hunt from Ted Lasso doing shows this year to brand new graduates right out of college producing their work for the first time. So it's really an opportunity for
anyone. So it's a laboratory.
Absolutely.
It's a laboratory. And there was one show where they asked the audience to get naked.
Yep.
With consent. You're not getting off the show without telling me about that.
It is bring your own towel, so it is safe. And what's so cool about that show is that there's all of these different safe holds that they have in place to make sure that the audience can go into a space, feel comfortable taking off their clothes, participate in theater with there's somebody that's watching to make sure that nobody's recording in the space. There's somebody that's making sure that people are following a code of conduct. It is a safe, sex-positive environment. And for us, that's the most important part about our platform, is providing that and telling our artists and teaching our artists how to create that environment for their own works.
You mentioned the word sex-positive, and that's a kind of a running theme, isn't it? There's certain parameters that you follow in what's okay in your theater performances.
Absolutely, and it's an anti-racist space. It's a space where equality matters and there's no hate speech allowed, but outside of that, anything goes, because that's arts and culture, right? It's providing experiences for every walk of life to experience theater in a different way.
And did I hear you say earlier, pro-women?
Yes, yeah, exactly. We actually, this year, we partner with the LAFPI and also Blacklist LA as our accountability partners. And LAFPI actually, which is the Los Angeles Female Playwrights Initiative, does an analysis on all of our numbers. We had over 56%, I believe,
that's right,
women and non-binary writers in the festival this year. And so it's an exciting space where it's a little bit different than the traditional theater space. You have people telling stories that they might not have been able to tell because people might not pay them to do that work, but they're going to put it up themselves.
And so one would think that these are not probably the price of tickets like on Broadway.
Definitely not. In fact, the average ticket price is $10. So not only is the platform accessible to theater artists because of kind of the shared responsibility with other artists sharing venue space and that sort of thing, but audiences have access to theater where they wouldn't otherwise. You know, it's $100 to see a lot of professional work. At Fringe, you get professional level work for $10 to $15.
Yeah, but is that part of the mission to make theater accessible?
It is a win-win-win. It needs to win for our audiences, which means accessible ticket pricing and a walkable theater space where they can see a show next to a show. Win for our artists, where they can make ticket sales back and make sure that they're putting their work out at a minimal cost. And a win for our venues to make sure that they're thriving in the heart of Hollywood.
So, yeah, here we are. Hooray for Hollywood. Right in the heart of Hollywood.
Yes.
And do some of the people in your theater performances end up getting a break because they were appearing in a performance?
Absolutely. In fact, we have an industry program within our festival, because the whole point is to be a professional platform for artists to take their shows to the next level. It really adds to the ecosystem. You know, out of college, artists need a chance to get their work up on their feet, to write shows, to have those early stage successes before they get to the places like CTG and are able to, you know, have those doors opened for them. They have to really create opportunities for themselves. And so through our industry program,
it's kind of a chain of working your way up. You start small, you get bigger, you get bigger, you get that thing, right?
Absolutely.
It's an ecosystem. So Edinburgh Fringe is the daddy fringe, as we call it, or mommy fringe, that has birthed so many works. And those have gone on to go to national theater level all the way up. And then ours have been able to do that as well, as we've seen through our
play. All right, so we're short on time. Just tell us, I know that You were wrapping up the regular season. Now you're going to have some special performances over the next few weeks. And where can people find out information about these performances?
Yeah. Please go to HollywoodFringe.org. We have shows that are extending all month long. And these are amazing shows. They've been selling out like mad. Over $400,000 in ticket sales over the last month alone. So these shows are impactful, and we want people to come see them.
All right, very good. Lois and Ellen, it's good to see you and meet you and have a chance to talk to you about Fringe. And Fox 11 News in Depth will continue right after this break. You know, it wasn't all that long ago that Greg and Tish Lemley weren't sure they could save their iconic movie chain. But here in 2023, it's still going strong. And the couple finds themselves with a new connection to the movies. We'll explain right after this. Don't go away.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. There we are. We've been talking about live theater, but there have been plenty of changes happening to movie theaters as well. Joining us right now, Greg and Tish Lemley of the Lemley Theater Chain. They own it. They've been friends for a long time, and it's good to see you again.
Great to see you.
You know, so much has changed since the last time that you were on this show. When we last saw you, we were in the middle of the pandemic. You just decided before that not to sell the chain, and then you were dealing with the COVID shutdown. Tell us a little bit about how the theaters are recovering. Of course, if they're recovering, I'm assuming they are.
Well, we've been open for over 2 years now, and yeah, we are seeing audiences coming back. It's still not at pre-pandemic levels, but we're making progress.
You know, I'm curious about that because, you know, when we talk about people coming back to the theaters, what is the possibility that you're going to see a much bigger group of people coming into these places this summer?
Well, summer is, you know, the key movie-going season, and there are more films in release right now, and they're, you know, bigger, you know, more films that hit, you know, a variety of audiences.
What changed over the past almost, 3 years?
It has been over 3 years since the shutdown. And, you know, what's changed is that a percentage of the audience has, you know, discovered streaming, and they're still playing with that new toy. But overall, I think people are coming back to the movie theaters. We've seen, you know, several films that have been, you know, huge blockbusters. We're just not seeing as many wide release films out there at the same time. And so it's, you know, it's a process of wooing people back. For an audience that was used to going to the movies every week or, you know, every couple weeks, they stopped. And we need to rebuild that habit.
I have to ask you, you talked about streaming and people are doing that. And I mean, how impactful has that proven to be? And is that something that has put a huge dent in the comeback for theaters like yours?
I think it's a factor. I don't think it's the only factor. I mean, we've been dealing with people having access to movies at their home for 60 years, ever since the advent of television. So streaming is certainly a different manner in which people are getting their films. And, you know, so it's different than a cable or DVD or any of those other kinds of things. But it's not necessarily a new challenge. You know, the being closed for 13 months and not having access to our customers, that was a bigger factor.
You know, I'm guessing that movies in art theaters are going to be a little different than movies at other multi-cinemas and what have you. But, you know, you've got the situation where people are paying for movies on their TVs. They are almost movies are like in a theater one day and 3 days later they're on your TV, but at a high price. That paradigm seems to have changed somewhat.
There has been an adjustment, but, you know, if anything, right now the adjustment is that the theatrical window is getting longer. Maybe not as long as it was pre-pandemic, but, you know, the idea of a film playing day and date on both VOD and in theaters, you know, the studios experimented with that, you know, during the first year of the reopening. And the results show that they're actually seeing more revenue when they have a theatrical window.
Wow. Let me ask you about some big news that you guys have. It's a documentary, and you're the subject of it. It's called Only in Theaters. And tell us a little bit about that.
It's a wonderful documentary. We had nothing to do with the making of it. We are just subjects in it. It was first the dream child of the producer, Raphael Sparge. I think his intent was he wanted to make a film about our family. And when we thought we were going to have to sell the theater chain, Greg said, "Oh, I don't think you're going to want to continue making the film." And Raphael said, "I'm really sorry to hear that you may have to sell, but I think this is going to make the documentary even more interesting." And then the pandemic came and the same thing happened. And we thought he wasn't going to want to continue making the film after that. And he said, "No, this is even more interesting." So it's really, it's a roller coaster of a documentary about films and movie theaters and the importance of movie theaters.
Greg, that's your dad in there, I'm seeing, right?
My dad's in there and my grandfather, who started the business.
Yeah, just the cliff notes, if you will, on the history of the theater chain.
Started in 1938 by my grandfather, Max Lemley, and his brother, Kurt Lemley. Started with two theaters, grew to six, went down to one, and, you know, started expanding again from there. So it's an 85-plus-year-old business, three generations, based in Los Angeles.
Very successful, to say the least, because you look how long you've lasted, and even through hurdles like the pandemic.
Well, look, we love what we do, and we love showing movies. We love showing movies in the city of Los Angeles. So, we're going to survive. And I do believe that this is the best way to see a movie, is to see it in a movie theater. And, you know, it goes through ups and downs, but people eventually come back around to wanting to see movies in the best possible environment. And that's going to be in a movie theater.
Well, I would see any movie that's got Tish and Greg Lemley in it. So let's tell everybody.
Well, we're going to be screening on the 8th of July at the new Vidiot's Theater in Eagle Rock. This is an old movie theater that was converted to another use, but the Vidiot's Foundation took over this theater. They've reopened it, and we're going to be one of the attractions. It's a perfect place for us to screen.
That is a perfect place. Now, this film can also be seen on Amazon. Is that right? On demand, and a DVD release coming up in July, on July 11th.
Yes, it is on demand and available for transactional VOD on Prime. It's going to be a DVD release on July 11th. But, you know, there will be the screening on July 8th, and we're going to be there for Q&A, and the filmmaker will be there as well. So it's a great opportunity.
Maybe I'll have to go see you there, because I'm going to see this movie. All right, Tish, Greg, good to see you. Thanks so much for joining us. And Fox 11 News In Depth continues right after this break. We'll have more. And finally, if you haven't checked out my podcast, you know what it's called. It's called What the Hal, and it's available wherever you subscribe to podcasts, or just go to whatthehalpodcast.com. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News In Depth. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week, everybody.